Well, good. We've got a very special guest with us for today's show. His name is Dr. John Small, and of course he is the chair of the Commerce Commission. And of course we think it's really important that whānau Māori, iwi Māori, hapū Māori understand a lot more about the work of the Commerce Commission, because any which way you look, we're all wrapped up in the work of the Commerce Commission, whether it be mobile phones, whether it be the supermarkets, whether it be banking, to me, pretty much anything. But there's also a bit of a backstory here. And I've been reading through John's bio, and there are a few snippets of gold in there that will really resonate with our audience, such as spending a couple of days at the tail end of the occupation on Bastion Point, which we're all familiar with. And then the pearl of wisdom, which I think is extraordinarily fantastic, there's a couple of arrests in there with the 81 Springbok tour. Now, look, don't think that is a negative. It's a positive. And the reason being is a lot of people somehow think that the Commerce Commission and the Commissioner is somehow above us all. And that's just not true. A lot of these people have lived a life, especially coming from a rather large family. I think a couple of brothers, a sister. There was another piece I read in the article that I was looking at around, let's just say, meeting or committee meetings in the afternoons to try and keep the whole household under control. Well, John joins me. John, welcome.
Kia ora, Matt. Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Jeez, you've lived a life.
It's not over yet.
No. I don't think it should be over yet. No. And in fact, any more future appointments, the better, to be frank. But I mean, you know, there is a story here. I mean, the Commerce Commission, we often think of as just this somehow government sort of quasi-agency organisation doing all this mahi related to everything from the economy to what have you. But actually, you're a real person.
I've tried to be that through my life. It's been quite a varied career. You know, it's taken me... You know, I've had probably several different careers in my life. Starting off, you know, when I left school, I was never really wanted to settle to anything, and I was a kind of a manual worker, all different types of jobs for quite a few years, really, 5 or 6 years or so, working farms and factories and those sort of positions. So it's been quite a long and winding road to the commission. But I feel I know what it's like to be a worker. I know what it's like to be a business owner. I know what it's like to be an academic. I know what it's like to be a civil servant. And they're all a bit different, but they're
Tramping.
Oh yeah, I was big on that. Yeah, I did a lot of that. Scrambling around in the mountains, around Te Wai Punamu. That's my kind of feels like my happy place. Yeah, all sorts of adventures. And, I mean, that kind of stuff actually puts you through a bit of adversity too. If you do enough of it, there's always something, something's going to go wrong eventually, and sometimes in quite spectacular ways. So, you know, but when you're out in a small group, you know, you've got to cope with that and get through it.
I think also people somehow think that the world is some sort of straight line, and it's not. You know, if an engineer would say, everything's a straight line, a plumber might say, no, it's not. And that's really what New Zealand's story is all about. I mean, we've grown up in a fundamentally different way. We've gone from living off the sheep's back and highly reliant on agriculture and horticulture now to becoming a much more services-based economy, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we had a really interesting chat at the commission recently with Justice Joe Williams. Mm. He talked about growing up in a family of freezing workers, and to now where he's a judge of the Supreme Court, that's a long and winding road. And somebody asked him a great question. Actually, they said, do you ever suffer from imposter syndrome? That idea that you shouldn't really be here, and you're not really quite good enough. And he said, oh yeah, and he said, I think a lot of us do. And then he said, and I also think it's a good thing, because the people who are really absolutely certain, they never doubt themselves, that's kind of, just slightly dangerous. So I think that little bit of doubt that, really keeps you on your toes.
I think also, how we project ourselves is always how others will see us. And if we project ourselves in some sort of way that is as an imposter, so to speak, people will not, have a connection with you.
No, that's right. And I mean, I don't know if there's any school kids listening, but you know, when I was at school, classes of school kids can tell an imposter a mile away. Yeah. You know, you get a relieving teacher in for the day, that can be brutal. Because the kids sense something there that's not quite right. Someone's a bit false, or even if it's not a relieving teacher. So I think, being yourself and being a genuine, empathetic person takes you a long way, and people can tell when you're not.
Mm. Well, Kiwis can. I can tell you that much. Hey, I want to talk about the economy for just a minute. I mean, the Māori economy, depending on the estimates, or anything between $130 to $180 billion. It's one of the green shoots, if you like. It's growing. More Māori are entering the middle class than ever before. They're taking more of an interest in business, the economy, and entrepreneurship, and all of these different things. From a Commerce Commission's point of view, and you as the chair, how important is it to engage with Te Wee Māori?
Oh, I think it's really important. I mean, for all sorts of reasons. The aspect that you've just been talking about is on the kind of business or broadly supply side of the economy, where capital's aggregated and put in service of a longer term goal. And on that, in that area, one of the great things about the Māori economy is that this is patient, stable, long-term capital. We're not talking about flows of hot money that come into the country and out again. We're not talking about private equity that goes and buys a company, strips it, loads it up with debt and walks away. This is long-term wealth creation for the good of New Zealanders. And so I think that's just fantastic. And then of course there's a lot on the buy side as well. Consumers are that's a big market.
It's a really interesting answer because, you know, I was chatting to somebody about this morning, and the phrase that kept on coming up is that we are a forever people, and we're playing the long game in terms of the outlook. The Māori population is younger compared to the general population demographic, which means that, I don't know if it's fate or irony, that as the New Zealand, the broader population begins to age, the younger Māori population appears to be increasing in its tax base.
Yep, and its purchasing power. So therefore, you know, naturally, if you think, as I kind of tend to believe, that economic power is a pretty influential force in terms of how our society develops. And so I think that will inevitably follow. And I also think it's, you know, you could also sort of trace that back, perhaps even through the legal system, and think, well, you know, now concepts of tikanga are being, you know, used in the legal system. And I think that's a reflection of that growing economic power.
Now, this is a way out there question, but I can't help myself. Māori have a special affinity with hikoi and with the protest movement. And now I know the backstory about the Springbok tour of 81. I've got to ask it, what was the motivation between... I mean, because it was a period of New Zealand history that really did divide families.
It did divide families. I think it was a really good question. It didn't divide our family, I'm pleased to say, but I know that it did in many others, and it divided friendship groups. I was a rugby player.
You wouldn't tell.
and so I kind of stopped playing rugby. I lost my enthusiasm for it, but look, I think what drove it was, it was just a really clear, very stark moral imperative that here was this, you know, country that we kind of knew. We thought we knew them because we'd been playing rugby with them and cricket for a long time, and there was that great sporting rivalry. And then people started to go, geez, look what they're doing. Mm. How could you live with yourself? How could you treat other people like that, the vast majority of people in your country? And so it kind of, you know, it, it kind of crystallized. It happened over a period of years, as you probably remember. You know, there was it kind of grew, and the protest movement sort of went, well, you know, we shouldn't be doing this. And we kept on doing it, and it kind of got louder and louder. It didn't go away. And, you know, if you look back now, I don't know, you might find some people who would say, yeah, I was pro-tour and I still am and I still think I'd made the right decision, but I don't think you'd find many.
What's really interesting, though, and the reason I use that as a backdrop, is for the last 40 years, New Zealand as a country has moved on and grown up, as has South Africa and others. And it's also the story of Te Ao Māori. It's the story of the New Zealand economy, diversification, etc. We haven't necessarily, unless I'm wrong, held back and still coming together on the big things that matter, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, in a way, the anti-tour movement, there were a lot of people like me, sort of, you know, middle-class white guys and women who showed up. There were a lot of Maori in there as well. I remember the second test in Wellington when, you know, we were divided up into squads according to our degree of enthusiasm. And there were some pretty enthusiastic people there. But look, I think what happened afterwards was then there was a questioning that said, yeah, okay, you can do that, you can stand up for people on the other side of the world, what about here? Mm. And legitimate questions were asked, and for me that felt like the beginning of a renaissance, or at least a turning point in a renaissance that kind of started to break down some of those barriers, and then you've got Holland Murray involvement at university and moving through the middle classes, as you were saying before. Mm.
Well, of course, Ngā Tamatoa was the big movement there at Auckland University, Huni, Hilda, Harawira, all that sort of thing. Bastion Point was happening at the time. It seemed to be a real coming-of-age period in New Zealand history. I mean, you know, for want of a better way of describing it, everything was going on with the French and Mura Atoll and Greenpeace, Te Mea. But coming back to it, so then you find yourself as an economist, you're going down the economist path?
Yeah, as I said, when I left school, I was a manual worker for quite a long time, and then I started, I was in and out of university. I kind of took a wee while to settle to
that. I think most New Zealanders have been in
university. Took a wee while to settle to it. But as a worker, I could see and also going through 1984, the economic revolution, I could see the power in the world of the discipline of economics. I had an affinity for maths, and the two of them happened to go together, and so it seemed to me like a natural thing to push on with. And I was, you know, I had a few lucky breaks along the way in terms of, as we often do in our careers, you see pivotal people, you meet pivotal people at different times. So I ended up studying economics to advanced level, and we moved to Auckland, and I took a job at Auckland Uni lecturing in economics. And that was great. For about 10 years, I loved it. It was really, felt great. One of the things that I really liked about it was the interaction with students and seeing students learn and grow and develop and then go off into the world, and it was very satisfying, but it didn't really last. I mean, 10 years was enough.
Well, I mean, 10 years as an academic would do it for most people. Hey, so what then got you interested in competition policy?
Well, it's all connected now you're mentioning it, because I could see economic power being the discipline of economics being useful in power dynamics and I suppose political economy, my other background, and so it became a natural focus for me was to look at the regulation of monopolies and the way that competition law works, because to me, there was a real it suited my, you know, how I'd got there, I suppose. And it's kind of, you know, to me, as 1984 and that period of economic revolution sort of reset, in a way, the social contract, didn't it? It kind of, you know, and the sort of the deal, broadly speaking, the deal was, look, this is all going to become a lot more competitive, but you're going to be better off. We're all going to be better off because we'll be more productive and efficient and all the rest of it. Oh, and by the way, in case that the big powerful commercial interests get out of hand, we've got these competition laws in this institution called a Commerce Commission that's going to kind of keep them in check. And, you know, so I was really interested, became really interested in that process, basically.
It's really interesting because I think the same pathway was taken by Alan Fels, not maybe for protests and things like that, but Alan Fels, who was the chairman of the ACCC over in Australia, again, at a time of great economic, not uncertainty, but certainly upheaval, the diversification of the Australian economy. And in many ways, step forward to today with Māori as well. We're seeing a diversification of Māori interests and assets away from just horticulture, agriculture. So shares ease is something that one of the iwi, I think it's Ngāi Tahu, have invested in. Then you've got the growth of Tainui Holdings. You've got what's going on with Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, a relatively smaller iwi compared to the bigger iwi of Ngāpuhi up north, for example, who have not settled and maybe never will. But you've got them diversifying into more service-oriented areas than ever before. And it seems to be advancing at a time when sometimes you feel that, not you personally, but the New Zealand economy is still in the crux of being semi-reliant on agriculture primary industry.
Yeah, I agree. It's not, you know, that sort of Māori investment is far from, you know, it's relatively far-sighted, I think. I mean, another example would be BlinkPay, which is, you know, iwi-funded from the outset, an innovator in the financial technology space. And so, yeah, I think that this shows a degree of bravery, innovation, and longer-term thinking that's just wonderful to see, really.
And you kind of mentioned before, I mean, in terms of competition policy, where the market was, where the market is currently today. I mean, there is the story that you could risk going, not you personally again, that you could go too far to the extreme of letting the market take over.
Yeah.
And without good, effective competition policy, the economy in itself could stagnate.
Yeah, look, I think it can go both ways, right? You could be too, as a competition regulator, if you're too weak, then you know you're going to drive really bad outcomes because firms that are too economically powerful, more economically powerful than they need to be, they don't tend to perform that well. So we know that competition is quite a powerful regulating force, and so you don't want to let them away too lightly, but on the other hand, you could really muck things up if you were excessively interventionist. So it's definitely a balancing act, yeah. And that's where I think having some commercial background is really helpful. And we try and cultivate that in our cohort of commissioners.
Now I've got to ask this: within your cohort of commissioners, is it like home where you have an afternoon committee meeting? Just settle disputes? I had to ask.
Fair question. No, we're a bit of a whānau, I suppose. This group came together really a bit over a couple of years ago, this current cohort, and one of the things I really like about it is that there's a really strong, united focus on what we're trying to achieve, and we've got we're much less risk averse, I think, than the commission has been in the past. We've got we're just talking on Friday, just revisiting our risk appetite statement, and so we're taking an awful lot more cases than we've got 40 cases in litigation at the moment. We're using I think we're using our voice more constructively, it just feels like a great organisation. Actually, it feels like a really good place to be, and I think our staff like it. I mean, we've got challenges, like all organisations do, but. It feels like a good place at the moment.
Well, that's a bit, we appreciate it because, I mean, as a broadcaster in Iwi Māori Radio and a growing online audience, we get to see what our people really want to know about. And having a question of the day, we're seeing more questions revolve around business, the economy, not so much cost of living. Everyone's very much in tune with that, but they're becoming more savvy, if you like, about the machinations of the economy.
Yeah, I think people have got a bit more sort of, I don't know, commercially literate or something.
I know,
you, Matt, were a great help to us in the grocery inquiry that we did a couple of years ago. And that kind of, I mean, one of the interesting things about that is that most New Zealanders now know what a duopoly is,
which is
kind of a term of art in economics, but... I think people are attuned to it, but at the same time, it's kind of more because it's the profile's higher, the expectations are higher on us as well, and that's one of the things I really feel is the need to meet those expectations as much as we can.
I remember running a hui on the grocery stuff, and we were in Masterton, had to identify the location, and this old lady came up to me afterwards, square, and she said to me, I've got some Duplo at home if you want it. and I said, oh, fire, love you, God bless, but no, we're talking about duopoly. And she said, oh, what's that? And we just sat there for an hour. But then she rang me about 2 weeks later and she said, look, I've been doing some research on the internet-y, which is apparently the way she described the internet. But God love her, she could now recite chapter and verse to me what a duopoly was.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is great. Because, it is about educating people, right?
And people start to think also about the supply chain as well. You know, that the retailers are at the front end of it, but there's other stuff that's happening up above. And what we really need is for all of that to be humming.
We had somebody the other week ring in wanting to correct us about the way that retail trade occurs in New Zealand. And he was an older gentleman again, and he just wanted to say, well, actually, that's not how Christmas works. And what he was trying to say to us is that traditionally retailers over Christmas have a payday. They get a windfall, if you like. People, consumers go out, they spend, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he wanted to talk to us about how the tailing effect or the impact isn't going to be as great this year as some would predict. They're not going to be hiring, they're not going to do this, they're not going to do that. It was a remarkable insight into, I don't think that conversation would have even have had been had a year ago, let alone 2 years ago.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because, yes, you did right. It goes to the seasonality of things and it's people really understanding that things happen in a different way. It's not all just vanilla. There's a whole lot of different shades in there that contribute, yeah.
Sure. That's right. Not everything's black and white. Especially for our Iwi Māori radio station. Hey, it's been great having you, and hopefully we can do this more often. We'd love to have you on a regular basis just to talk about stuff, particularly when there are inquiries that might be going on or reports that need to be fed into. We'd really hope that you'd come back in and join us.
Oh, I'd love to do that, Matt. Thank you very much indeed. Fantastic opportunity, and there's all sorts of details that we could talk about different industries, and yeah, I'd be delighted.
And finally, don't forget to go to our website. You'll be finding there a very new tab for business, finance, and the economy, and make sure that you. Engage with us nicely on Facebook and TikTok and all the other forums and platforms that we've got, and no bad negative feedback, only positive insights. Otherwise, you might get block banned. John, thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very much, Matt. That's been great.